We would like to send out a special thanks to the fun, binge-worthy puzzle game Best Fiends for supporting our podcast. Download Best Fiends for free from the App Store or Google Play. Plus, earn even more with $5 worth of in-game rewards when you reach level 5. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Enjoy the show. March 14th, 1998. Roger Mills County, Oklahoma. 39-year-old Leonard Derrickson prepares breakfast for his son Jared before a man driving a pickup truck shows up at the ranch. When Leonard goes outside and speaks to the driver, he tells Jared that the man is interested in looking at one of his horses, but after they leave together in the truck, Leonard does not return. Even though there are a couple of reported sightings to suggest that Leonard might still be alive, he cannot be found, and the driver of the pickup truck is never identified. After that, the trail went cold. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and today we're going to be exploring a truly perplexing missing persons case that was featured on Unsolved Mysteries, the 1998 disappearance of Leonard Derrickson. Ever since the inception of this podcast, I've received numerous requests to cover this one because the circumstances of what happened do not seem to make any sense. Leonard Derrickson was a divorcee who lived with his teenage son Jared at a ranch in rural Oklahoma, but everything changed when a pickup truck being driven by an unidentified man suddenly showed up there one morning. Leonard and this man would have a brief conversation, and even though Jared could not actually hear what they said, Leonard told him that the man was interested in looking at one of his stud horses, so he would accompany him to the locations where the horses were being kept. Leonard said that he expected to return later that day, but after he climbed into this man's truck and left the property, Leonard was never heard from again. It's tempting to believe that the unidentified driver murdered Leonard and disposed of his body somewhere, but if so, what could the motive have been, and how did this person find Leonard's remote ranch to begin with? But unlike most other missing persons cases, you cannot completely discount the possibility that Leonard might have disappeared voluntarily, as he was suffering from serious financial problems at the time, and there would be a couple of reported sightings of him after he went missing. Of course, those who knew Leonard believed that he never would have abandoned his son Jared, but what further complicates this case are some cryptic comments that were left on an internet message board years later, which suggested that Leonard may have been living in another state under a false identity. We'll go into more detail about this angle later on, but no matter how hard you analyze this case, there is no scenario to explain Leonard's disappearance that makes 100% complete sense, which is why this is the perfect mystery to explore on this podcast. Also, since there is a limited amount of material available about Leonard's case, I thought I would use this episode as an opportunity to talk about a second case from Unsolved Mysteries about a missing man named Lee Young, a bank fraud investigator who vanished in May of 1990 after his abandoned burning car was discovered in the Arizona desert. It's been reported that Lee was cooperating in a federal drug investigation involving money laundering, so all things considered, there's a surprising lack of information available about this case. But it's still unsolved over 3 decades later, so after I'm done discussing Leonard Derrickson's disappearance, I'm going to take some time to talk about this one. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now start off by exploring the disappearance of Leonard Derrickson.
Mm-hmm.
Our story begins in Roger Mills County, Oklahoma in 1998. Our central figure is 39-year-old Leonard Derrickson, who lives on a remote 800-acre ranch located just outside the town of Cheyenne. 2 years earlier, Leonard had gone through a divorce with his ex-wife Kathy, whom he married straight out of high school, and the divorce would involve a bitter custody dispute for their two children, Jared and Connie. While Connie, who was 14 years old at this point, went to live with her mother in the town of Hammond, Jared, who is currently 16 years old, elected to stay with his father. At around 9 a.m. on the morning of Saturday, March the 14th, Leonard prepared breakfast for Jared, and while they were eating together, they discussed the chores they were planning to do that day. They raised cattle, pigs, and horses on the ranch, and one of their scheduled tasks was to drive 30 miles to Elk City in order to pick up some feed. However, after they finished their breakfast, they noticed a pickup truck suddenly pull up outside, so Leonard walked out the front door to see who it was. Jared remained inside the house and saw his father approach the driver of the truck, who remained in the cab the entire time. Jared said he did not recognize the driver and got the impression that Leonard did not recognize him either, but while he was unable to hear their conversation, Jared believed it appeared to be cordial. He would later describe the truck as being a white 1994 Ford F-150 single cab pickup, and while he did not get a clear look at the license plate, he said it was yellow and believed it might have been from New Mexico. However, since New Mexico only required vehicles to have plates on the rear at that time, it's unclear if Jared actually saw a yellow license plate or just a yellow customized tag. Whatever the case, it sounds like Jared was too far away to make out a license number. When Leonard walked back inside to grab his jacket, he told Jared that the driver was interested in looking at one of his stud horses. Leonard owned a total of 15 horses, most of which were located at a stable in Elk City, but one of them was at a stud ranch located across the state line in the town of Mobeety, Texas, over 50 miles away. Leonard said he would accompany the man to both these locations in his pickup truck, and even though Jared was willing to tag along, Leonard asked him to stay behind because he needed him to drive to Elk City to pick up the feed since the store closed at noon. Leonard told Jared he would likely return sometime during the afternoon, but after he climbed into the pickup and it drove off, Jared never saw his father again. Leonard did not return home that afternoon, and when he failed to resurface by the following morning, Jared reported him missing to the Roger Mills County Sheriff's Department, who had not handled a missing persons case since 1981. Their first step was to check out the locations of Mobeety and Elk City where Leonard kept his stud horses, but they found nothing to indicate that he had visited either of those places on the day he went missing. Jared found the whole story about the pickup driver being interested in one of Leonard's horses to be strange, since his father had not advertised them as being for sale. Furthermore, Jared was also unsure how this man even knew where they lived, since their ranch was located in a very remote area which could only be accessed by driving on some back roads, so it was a difficult place to find unless one knew exactly where they were going. Once Leonard's disappearance started generating publicity, investigators were contacted by a waitress at the Kettle Restaurant in Elk City, who reported seeing Leonard there at 11 a.m. on the morning he disappeared, about 2 hours after he left the ranch. She said that Leonard was accompanied by a man who seemed to match the description Jared provided of the pickup truck driver, and they ordered the buffet breakfast. The waitress did not report anything unusual between them, though she said that the other man did most of the talking while Leonard sat back drinking coffee and listening to him. However, the sighting struck investigators as odd, since Leonard had already eaten breakfast with Jared 2 hours earlier and wondered why he would be having another one so soon. Since the waitress had recognized Leonard from a photocopy of a picture of him which ran in the local newspapers, there was speculation that she might have mistook him for another man. Nonetheless, based on the description provided by Jared and the waitress, a composite sketch was created and circulated of the other man, who was described as being a white male with a reddish-brown beard who appeared to be in his early 40s. He was approximately 6'2" and 210 pounds and wore blue jeans, a striped western shirt, a blue jacket, and a baseball cap that had the words "No Fear" written on it. He was also seen smoking Marlboro Light cigarettes. For the next 6 months, there would be virtually no leads in the case, until an unexpected development took place in Amarillo, Texas, over 150 miles southwest from where Leonard went missing. In September of 1998, the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation received an anonymous phone call from a man who claimed he was calling from a remote bar in Amarillo and that Leonard Derrickson was there. The man claimed he was from Elk City and knew Leonard personally, and that Leonard was currently drunk and dressed in a blue checkered shirt. Even though the caller was asked for his name, he declined to share it, but said he would remain at the bar to speak with the authorities before he hung up. Well, the local police soon went to the bar, but by the time they arrived, the caller was gone, and there was no sign of anyone resembling Leonard. When this information was shared with the Roger Mills County Sheriff's Department, one of their investigators traveled to the bar the following day. The bartender was interviewed and did confirm that she recalled seeing a man call the authorities from a payphone the previous night. Investigators would secretly spend some nights hanging out at the bar on the chance Leonard might return at some point, but he never did. But the sighting did open up the possibility that Leonard might still be alive somewhere and had disappeared voluntarily. After Leonard married his ex-wife Kathy, the couple had ran their own dairy business in the hamlet of Strong City, but the high cost of feed and the rapidly dropping price of milk made it very difficult for Leonard to maintain the business following the divorce. He was forced to sell it off in December of 1997, only 3 months before he went missing, which left him in serious debt. Since he was suffering from financial problems, Leonard took a job at a local metal company and told his parents that he really enjoyed it, so much so that his father, Don Derrickson, was considering the possibility of buying the company for his son. But in spite of his financial issues, Leonard's family had a hard time believing he would have taken off on his own accord, as he had a very close relationship with Jared, and they found it hard to imagine that he would have just abandoned his son without letting him know where he was. Furthermore, Leonard did not cash his last paycheck before he disappeared, and was believed to be carrying less than $150 in cash on him, and there would also be no activity on his credit cards, even though they had already been maxed out by the time he went missing. Leonard's disappearance would be featured on an episode of Unsolved Mysteries, which aired in October of 2001, but it did not bring the case any closer to a resolution. In October of 2015, Leonard's father, Don Derrickson, passed away at the age of 84, and on March the 31st, 2022, just over 1 month before this episode's release, one of Leonard's older brothers, Ronald, passed away at the age of 69. In both of their obituaries, Leonard was listed as having preceded them in death, but after 24 years, there are still no conclusive answers about what happened to him. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. But before we continue, I would like to share a spooky side story. There was this one time where I went out with friends to hang out, but after a while, they suddenly noticed that I had disappeared. And once they found out what happened, their only response was, I guess you could say, the trail went fiendish. That's right, I didn't really disappear, I just snuck off for a while to play Best Fiends again because it's impossible to resist. Best Fiends is a free-to-download mobile puzzle game with thousands of exciting new levels for new adventures and challenges every time you play. There are dozens of unique fiends to collect, so you can customize your team of fiends to defeat the menacing slugs. And it's also worth mentioning that it has offline play, so if you're in a situation like the one I just described and at a location where you don't have an internet connection, you'll never be stranded. I've been playing Best Fiends for around 2.5 years now, and it's a great way to let off steam after working so hard on my podcast. At this particular point in time, I am nearing level 3700, and there's so many great adventures in the game that I don't see myself running out of levels anytime soon. It's been quite an experience getting this far, and I wouldn't keep talking about it if I didn't continue playing. So download Best Fiends for free from the App Store or Google Play. Plus, earn even more with $5 worth of in-game rewards when you reach level 5. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of this episode. So I definitely think this is one of the more underrated cases featured in Unsolved Mysteries, because while it's easy to believe that Leonard Derrickson was the victim of foul play, I guess you can't completely discount the idea that he took off on his own. Well, at least you couldn't discount that theory at the time the Unsolved Mysteries segment originally aired, since Leonard had only been missing for 3.5 years at that point. But at the time of this recording, we recently passed the 24-year anniversary of his disappearance, which makes the possibility of him still being alive after all this time far less likely. However, while there is only a limited amount of information available about this case from verified sources, there is no shortage of information from unverified sources, which has made researching this story a bit of a challenge. As an example, if you go to Leonard Derrickson's page at the Unsolved Mysteries Wikia, you'll find this line, quote, "According to one of Leonard's relatives, police do have a suspect in this case. The man knew Leonard, lives in Texas, and allegedly refused to let investigators search his properties. However, no further information is available on the alleged suspect," end quote. Well, that's certainly an interesting development, but unfortunately, I've never seen this information corroborated by any other sources, and I have no idea where it originated from. As I'm sure you know, anyone can edit a wiki page, so I would treat this detail about the suspect with a huge grain of salt. But perhaps the strangest online drama surrounding this case originated from the website Zobasearch.com, which is a database you can use to look up information about United States residents, including their names, current and past addresses, phone numbers, and other details about their background. The information I'm about to share with you is not currently available on the site, but you can still find it archived in the Wayback Machine, and it has been the subject of heavy discussion in places like the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit and the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum, which I'm always referencing on this podcast. The way Zobasearch used to work is that if you use their database to look up information about an individual, you could leave comments on a message board associated with that person's name. And what appears to have happened is that a poster from Spokane, Washington, calling yourself Kim, left a number of odd comments on the message boards for Leonard Derrickson, Jared Derrickson, and Leonard's father, Don Derrickson. These comments all have dates and weekdays associated with them, mostly from November, but it doesn't have the actual years listed, so I'm not entirely sure when they were originally written. However, since it lists the comments as having been left on dates like Wednesday, November the 14th, and Thursday, November the 22nd, that would likely place the year as either being 2007 or 2012. So here's an example of one of the comments. Quote, "Please, Leonard, will you call your son Jared in Oklahoma and let him know you're okay? Your family wants you to come home. I just want the best for you. We all care about you. Take care, Kim." End quote. Or, quote, "Leonard, did you contact your son yet? I do anything for you because I love you and care about you and your son. You're so handsome. Send me an email. Love, Kim." End quote. These comments appear to have been posted on the Zobasearch message board for Leonard, and like I just mentioned, Kim also sent comments to Jared and Don in which she revealed details about Leonard's current whereabouts. Kim told them that Leonard was now living in Cheney, Washington, and going by the name Jim Williams, and that another guy named Don Williams was telling people that Leonard was his brother. At one point, Kim even provided license numbers for vehicles that Leonard was currently driving, and some of the more interesting comments that Kim left for Leonard were, quote, "I don't know why you're hanging around Don and Carlos, the losers," and, quote, "Your brother told me he paid your bills, that everything is okay, whenever you're ready," end quote. Now, obviously, this situation might be nothing more than an elaborate troll job, but if this is a prank, it's a pretty bizarre one. Judging from the wording on Kim's comments, she did not know the Derrickson family at all, so if she's legitimately sincere, the impression I get is that since Cheney is located just outside of Spokane, Kim may have been acquainted with this Jim Williams guy, and then became convinced he was Leonard Derrickson living under a false identity. The thing with Leonard is that if you've seen photos of him, he was a pretty distinct-looking guy because he had a large handlebar mustache, so theoretically, if Jim Williams had a mustache like that as well, and Kim somehow learned about Leonard's case, such as from watching it on Unsolved Mysteries, she may have believed that both men were the same person. But if that's the case, why not contact law enforcement? Why leave comments on a message board for a website that Leonard and his family may never even frequent? Also, why is she telling Leonard she loves him and cares about him, and is frequently commenting about how handsome he is? I believe that Kim's comments were first noticed and became the subject of discussion by online sleuths around 10 years ago, so I'd like to think that law enforcement has at least been made aware of them and spent some time checking into the information that Kim shared. For all we know, this lead may have already been investigated, and the idea of Leonard living under an alias in Washington State has been ruled out. But I have to wonder if these cryptic comments helped pave the way for another theory which is often brought up in online discussions about this case. So if you go to the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit, you'll find a thread about Leonard's disappearance which was written by a poster with the great username Bubba Joe Jones. The thread has 660 comments, and surprisingly, a decent amount of them have addressed the possibility that Leonard may have disappeared voluntarily because he was secretly gay. Well, I can honestly say that before I saw that thread, I never would have considered that a possibility, and quite frankly, I was surprised that so many commenters seemed to gravitate towards it. I don't know if people were just getting this vibe because of the acclaimed movie Brokeback Mountain, which involved two cowboys becoming involved in a secret romantic relationship, as I'm sure that rural Oklahoma in 1998 would not have been the ideal place to come out of the closet if you were gay. Perhaps they formulated this theory because Leonard was a recent divorcee, and because we have those comments from ZabaSearch, which alleged that he was living under a new identity in a different state, with another man who was falsely passing off Leonard as his brother. Is this supposed to imply that the man in the pickup truck was Leonard's lover? The biggest argument against Leonard taking off voluntarily is the belief that he never would have abandoned Jared, but could this have been a big enough secret that he was willing to run away and start over and cut off all contact with his family? I mean, this case is so perplexing that I suppose any theory is possible, but I really don't feel comfortable pushing forward the theory that a missing, potentially murdered individual was a closeted gay man if there is zero conclusive evidence to support it. I think one of the big issues with Leonard running away for this reason, or any other reason for that matter, is that it seemed completely unplanned. Since Jared was a student, Leonard could have easily decided to take off on a day while his son was in school, so no one would have any idea what happened to him. It really doesn't make much sense for this guy in the pickup truck to show up at the ranch on a Saturday morning while Jared was there, since Jared was able to provide enough identifying information about the man for a composite sketch. Jared's impression about his father's conversation with the driver is that Leonard did not know the man, but he also didn't detect anything unusual about their interactions, as if Leonard was taken aback by this guy suddenly showing up there. However, if there's one unproven theory I am willing to believe might be true, it's that Leonard's claim about the man showing up there to look at one of his stud horses might have been a false cover story. The situation is a bit reminiscent of another case which was covered on Unsolved Mysteries and The Trail Went Cold, and that's the 1974 disappearance and murder of Gary Simmons. As you might recall, Gary went missing after supposedly making a deal to purchase a horse from a man named Tom Dixon for $30,000. But since that seemed like a pretty exorbitant price for a horse, especially back then, there's always been speculation that this might have been a cover story, and Gary was planning to use that money for something else. Now, to be fair, we know that Leonard actually did own 15 stud horses, which he kept at two separate locations, and even though he had never put out any advertisements to sell them, I suppose word of mouth could have spread about these horses, and it garnered this man's interest, as the area where Leonard lived was a very small, tight-knit community. Leonard was in debt, and had been experiencing financial difficulties after his dairy business folded, so even if the pickup driver showed up completely out of the blue, Leonard may have wanted the money badly enough that he was willing to drop everything else he was doing and show him the horses. You might question the logic of Leonard climbing into a truck with someone he didn't know in order to travel to these locations, but since he needed Jared to go to the store to pick up some feed that morning, this might explain why he left his own vehicle behind. But it's worth mentioning that Jared had initially told his father he was willing to tag along with him on this trip until Leonard asked him to pick up the feed. If the story about this guy asking Leonard to show him some horses was legitimate, what would have happened if Jared had climbed into the truck and gone along with him? But if something else was going on, did Leonard want to ensure that Jared was not involved? Another theory which has been pushed forward is that Leonard could have borrowed and owed money to some dangerous people, and the pickup driver was involved, so after they left together, Leonard was killed. We know that Leonard's dairy business went under 3 months earlier, but the details about Leonard's financial issues are a bit vague. Though one article I found from a July 2000 edition of the Daily Oklahoman featured this line from Roger Mills County Sheriff Joe Hay, who stated, quote, "Leonard was having a lot of financial problems. I don't even think his family realized how bad it was," end quote. I find that quote interesting, since that same article states that Leonard was enjoying his new job at a local metal company so much that his father, Don, thought about buying the business for his son. So if Don had that type of money lying around, this gives me the impression that Leonard could have always gone to him if his financial troubles were that serious. I think the biggest issue people had with the idea of the pickup driver showing up to Leonard's ranch to purchase a horse is that it was located in a remote area which was not all that easy to find. Jared always claimed that he did not recognize the driver, so if this person had ever visited the ranch before, it likely occurred when Jared was not there. But if this man was a complete stranger to both Leonard and Jared, and there was nothing out there, such as some flyers, advertising the sale of a horse which provided an address for the ranch, how did he know where they lived? This is why it's been theorized that an outside party who was familiar with the area could have provided him with directions. So ever since Leonard disappeared, there have been two major eyewitness sightings of him which stuck out. The sighting from the waitress at the Kettle Restaurant in Elk City 2 hours after he left the ranch, and the anonymous call from the bar in Amarillo 6 months later. It sounds like law enforcement has always put a lot more stock into the second sighting than the first. They believe that the waitress might have simply mistaken Leonard for another man, but when discussing the bar sighting during his interview on Unsolved Mysteries, Sheriff Joe Hay seemed to find it credible and flat out stated, quote, "I believe he was in that bar in Amarillo." Sheriff Hay also expressed his skepticism about Leonard ordering a second breakfast at the Kettle Restaurant because he had just eaten breakfast with Jared 2 hours earlier, but I'm not sure that detail means a whole lot. The restaurant was serving a buffet breakfast at that time, and the waitress specifically described Leonard drinking coffee while listening to the other man speak, so perhaps he just didn't eat all that much. I know that eyewitnesses are mistaken in missing persons cases all the time, but I can't completely discount this one for two reasons. A, Leonard had a large, very distinct-looking handlebar mustache, and B, she said he was accompanied by a man who seemed to match the description of the man Jared saw in the pickup truck. And it would also make sense for Leonard and this man to stop for food in Elk City, since that's where most of his horses were kept. The key difference between the sightings of the man from Jared and the waitress is that Jared would have seen him from several feet away while he was inside the cab of his truck, while the waitress likely saw him up close. It's not entirely clear to me if they both specifically described the man wearing a baseball cap with the words "No Fear" written on it, but that's a very distinct detail and seems like too much of a coincidence if they each mentioned it independently. The waitress did not believe there was anything unusual going on between Leonard and the man, so the obvious question is, if he was planning to kill Leonard, why would he allow himself to be seen out in public with him? Could something have gone wrong between them at a later time? And what are we to make of the second sighting which took place in the bar in Amarillo? Given that the caller was reluctant to give his name and did not hang around to speak with the police, you could easily write off this whole thing as a bizarre prank, but it's a pretty random one, since it took place about 150 miles away from where Leonard disappeared in a completely different state. We know that the bartender at this establishment was able to verify that she heard this call take place from a payphone, but it sounds like she did not get a good enough look at the caller to provide a description, and I also don't get the impression that she was able to confirm whether or not anyone matching Leonard's description was at the bar that night. But since Sheriff Hay seemed to believe this was a credible sighting, I wonder if he learned a piece of specific information which has never been disclosed publicly to make him believe that Leonard was there. Now, the last angle I want to discuss is Leonard's divorce from his ex-wife Kathy, as we don't really know too many details about it, only that it involved a custody dispute with their two children. Even though it's been established that Jared had a very close relationship with his father, there's virtually nothing out there about Leonard's relationship with his daughter Connie, only that she wound up living with her mother. But I find it very interesting that after Leonard disappeared, Jared refused to live with Kathy, and instead went to live with his grandparents. In fact, in the aforementioned Daily Oklahoman article from July of 2000, it stated that Jared had only began talking to his mother again the previous year. So I definitely feel there must be a story behind all this. While I don't know the specifics of this child custody battle, I get the impression that Leonard fought really hard to gain custody of Jared, which is one reason why it wouldn't make much sense for him to take off and abandon his son less than 2 years later. I'm certainly not going to accuse Leonard's ex-wife of being involved in what happened, since we don't know anything about her, but theoretically, if she wanted to get rid of Leonard, and the man in the pickup truck was working on her behalf, this might explain why he was able to find Leonard's ranch. However, I would like to think that law enforcement had already explored this angle, and they've never given off any indication that Leonard's divorce had any connection to his disappearance. In fact, investigators have been pretty open about the fact that they really don't have much idea of what happened here, as there is so little evidence to work with, and no real potential suspects who might have had a motive to harm Leonard. I do have to harken back to that line from the Unsolved Mysteries wiki page about there being a suspect in Texas who refuses to let investigators search his properties, but again, I have no idea where this piece of information originated from, or if it's even true. There really hasn't been any reporting about this case from any media outlets since it was featured in Unsolved Mysteries over 20 years ago, so who knows if investigators have been able to uncover anything new that they never disclosed publicly. I will say that some of the most vivid portions of the Unsolved Mysteries segment are Jared's interview snippets, because he appeared to be truly devastated and heartbroken about losing his father. When the two options are that Leonard took off voluntarily and abandoned him, or that he became the victim of foul play, it's pretty much a no-win situation for Jared, but he deserves to have answers about what happened. I definitely do not think the odds of Leonard still being alive out there somewhere under a new identity are high, but I guess anything is possible in this case. As it is right now, I consider this to be one of the more perplexing unsolved missing persons cases of the modern era, so I would certainly love to see a resolution someday. So before we conclude this episode, I want to take a few moments to discuss another strange missing persons case, and that's the unsolved disappearance of Lee Young. So our second story begins in Scottsdale, Arizona in 1990, and our second victim is 56-year-old Lee Young, who lives with his wife, Connie Young. Lee is a former police officer from the Scottsdale Police Department until he was shot in the back in the line of duty during a gunfight in 1961. And while he managed to make a full recovery, the incident brought his career in law enforcement to a premature end. Lee now works as a fraud investigator at First Interstate Bank of Arizona, and he also runs a side business in which he buys and sells jewelry in his spare time. On May the 4th, Lee went to have lunch at Coco's Restaurant on North Scottsdale Road, which was his ordinary daily routine, and he dined with two local real estate agents. According to one of the agents, they left the restaurant at around 12:30 p.m., and he last saw Lee walking towards his vehicle, a plum-colored 1985 Lincoln Town Car, but this would turn out to be the last time Lee was confirmed to be alive. Shortly before 7:30 a.m. the following morning, a deputy from the Pinal County Sheriff's Office discovered an abandoned burning vehicle in a remote desert area near the town of Oracle. The location was over 110 miles southeast of Scottsdale and 1.3 miles from the nearest road, and after the flames on the vehicle were doused, it was identified as Lee's Lincoln Town Car. The car was so badly burned that investigators were unable to obtain much evidence from it, and a search of the surrounding area turned up no trace of Lee. At the time Lee disappeared, his wife Connie had been out of town attending a family funeral. Lee was scheduled to pick Connie up at Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport when she returned home on the evening of May 6th, but after he failed to show, she contacted the police to report her husband missing and learned about the discovery of his burning car. Due to his side jewelry business, Lee often carried around large amounts of cash, but since thousands of dollars worth of jewelry was found inside the trunk, robbery did not appear to be the motive for what happened. The only items which appeared to be missing were Lee's briefcase, which contained a number of files related to his job at the bank, as well as a copper-faced Rolex wristwatch Lee always wore that had diamonds around its face and band and was worth $25,000. According to the real estate agents who had lunch with Lee at Coco's Restaurant, they had started having a conversation about gold nuggets and noticed that a man who was seated across a narrow aisle at the restaurant's lunch counter had started eyeing them suspiciously. He was described as being approximately 40 years old, 5'10", and around 185 pounds, and he also had dark hair and was dressed in jeans and a plaid shirt. The man soon decided to use a credit card to pay for his lunch without actually finishing it, and left the restaurant about 6 minutes before Lee did. While one of the agents said that he last saw Lee walking towards his town car when they left, he could not confirm actually having seen Lee climb inside. Another eyewitness sighting was provided by a ranch hand in Pinal County, who thought he remembered seeing the town car driving north on a dirt road sometime between 7:30 and 8 p.m. on the evening of May the 4th, nearly 12 hours before it was found burning. Records would show that after Lee left the restaurant, his car phone had received one incoming call and was used to make 3 outgoing calls, though it was unclear if Lee himself made them. All 3 of the outgoing calls occurred shortly after 2 p.m. that day, and while one of them went to a payphone, the other 2 went to a woman who denied ever speaking with Lee. It turned out that 6 months before he went missing, Lee had contacted federal drug agents because he suspected that his bank was being used in a money laundering ring which involved a Colombian drug cartel. It's believed that Lee was willing to cooperate with an investigation into this matter, and in the week prior to his disappearance, he made several attempts to get in touch with the federal agents he had previously spoken to, but was unsuccessful at reaching them. Specific details about this investigation have never been made public, but it was apparently still ongoing at the time Lee disappeared, and it's been theorized that Lee's missing briefcase may have contained important documentation that was connected to it. While the story would be featured on an episode of Unsolved Mysteries in April of 1992, it does not seem like there have been any new developments since then, and it's unclear if this alleged money laundering ring was ever uncovered. So unfortunately, this is pretty much all the information we have about this case, and Lee Young continues to remain a missing person after 3 decades. So yes, I really wish there was more I could share with you, but the Unsolved Mystery segment is only 5 minutes long, and pretty much gives you the bare minimum of details. As far as outside sources go, I could only find a few Arizona-based newspaper articles that were published in the weeks following Lee's disappearance, as well as a couple more from April of 1992, which announced that the case was going to be featured on Unsolved Mysteries. But after that, there's nothing. I think it goes without saying that there's pretty much zero chance that Lee staged his own disappearance and went off to start a new life somewhere. When she was interviewed on Unsolved Mysteries, Lee's wife Connie stated that while she would like to believe that he was still alive, she had pretty much come to terms with the fact that he had become the victim of foul play. I did appreciate that these newspaper articles provided specific details about how Lee disappeared from Coco's restaurant in Scottsdale, because the Unsolved Mystery segment never mentioned the account from the 2 real estate agents who claimed that a strange man appeared to be staring at them while they conversed about gold nuggets. But on the other hand, none of these additional sources made any mention of the federal investigation into money laundering that Lee was supposedly involved with. You can understand why the authorities would not release much information about that, since the investigation was still ongoing, but here we are 30 years later, and I have zero idea how the whole thing ultimately turned out. Lee worked as a fraud investigator for First Interstate Bank of Arizona, and while I did some searching to see if any money laundering scandals involving that bank took place during the 1990s, I came up empty. It seems like one of the reasons people believed that this money laundering investigation was connected to Lee's disappearance was because robbery did not appear to be the motive for this crime. A bunch of valuable jewelry Lee carried around was still inside the trunk of his car when it was burned, and the only item that appeared to be missing was his briefcase, which may have contained important files about his bank fraud investigation. While Lee was wearing a valuable $25,000 Rolex that never turned up, this might be because he still had it on his wrist when he was murdered and his body was disposed of. Regardless, Unsolved Mystery still put a lot of emphasis on the Rolex, since there was always a chance that the person who killed Lee might have decided to take his watch and someone could have conceivably recognized it. Going back to the sighting of the man at Coco's restaurant, it's been reported that this guy left 6 minutes before Lee did. He also paid for his lunch without finishing it, so perhaps he sensed that Lee realized he was watching him and decided to split. I do think it's very important that while one of the real estate agents said they last saw Lee walking towards his Lincoln Town Car, he could 100% confirm that Lee actually climbed into it and drove away. I mean, it's possible that the man from the restaurant has no significance to the case, and the two agents were just interpreting a mundane situation in a much more sinister fashion because their colleague happened to go missing. But if this man was involved, he theoretically could have ambushed Lee at his town car and forced him to drive somewhere against his will. I read that it was apparently Lee's routine to eat lunch at the same restaurant virtually every day, so if he was being targeted, I can see how someone would know he would be there at that particular time. I guess you can't completely discount the possibility that Lee was the victim of a random robbery because someone from the restaurant noticed his expensive Rolex and overheard his conversation about gold nuggets and figured he was a wealthy person. However, disposing of Lee's body and driving his car out into the desert over 110 miles away before setting it on fire seems like a major overreaction to a simple robbery. The whole manner in which this crime was staged really gives off the impression of a professional hit committed by someone who really wanted to cover their tracks. Regardless of whether Lee was abducted from the restaurant or crossed paths with his killer at a later time, it seems like investigators believe that something happened to him around or after 2 p.m. that day because of a series of calls that were made from his car phone. This is definitely the most frustrating aspect of this case, because the details provided are so vague. It's been reported that Lee received one incoming call on the car phone, but it's never been revealed where the call originated from. For all we know, this could have been someone asking Lee to meet them somewhere where he wound up being ambushed. We've also been told that one of the calls made from Lee's phone went to a payphone, while the other two went to a woman who claimed she never spoke to him, but unfortunately, that's all we have. Needless to say, I would really love to know more information about who this woman was and how she might fit into this. Obviously, the authorities did not have enough evidence to prove that the woman was complicit in Lee's disappearance, which is probably why they declined to release any further details. For all we know, she could have just been an innocent person who received a couple of calls which were made to a wrong number, but whatever the case, there had to be multiple people involved in what happened. The spot where Lee's car was torched was a very remote area in the middle of nowhere, so whoever drove the town car there and set it on fire would have needed someone else to pick them up and give them a ride back to civilization. As for Lee's body, there are any number of places in the Arizona desert where he could have been buried, but given the professional nature of this crime, I have a feeling they would have disposed of him at an entirely different location than where the car was burned. The vehicle was found approximately 19 hours after Lee was last seen alive, so the responsible parties would have had ample time to cover their tracks. I definitely am inclined to believe that Lee's disappearance was somehow connected to this money laundering investigation. In the week before he went missing, Lee had made numerous unsuccessful attempts to contact the federal drug agents he was working with, so he may have recently uncovered some very incriminating information, but was killed before he could provide it to anyone. But given the secretive nature of this investigation, we can only speculate on what Lee might have found and who decided to have him killed. While there haven't been any new developments in this case for the past 3 decades, the fact that Lee's Unsolved Mystery segment is still available for viewing on YouTube and Amazon Prime, and we're still talking about his story on this podcast, means that we cannot give up hope that someone out there knows something. So if you happen to have any information on the disappearance of Lee Young, please contact the Scottsdale Police Department at 480-312-5155. That's 480-312-5155. And if you happen to have any information about the disappearance of Leonard Derrickson, please contact the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation at 1-800-522-8017. That's 1-800-522-8017. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Another reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. This past month, I released a bonus episode about a famous case from Unsolved Mysteries where a woman named Stephanie Booker had her face slashed by a propeller in a hit-and-run incident involving a speedboat, and the perpetrators were never identified. In addition, we've dropped an exclusive bonus episode from my spin-off podcast, The Path Went Chilly, in which myself, Jules, and our other co-host Ashley cover another classic case from Unsolved Mysteries, the unexplained 1989 death of Russell Evans. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. I'd also like to give a shout-out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Christine O, Lucy J, Pearl O, Kyle S, and Laura. Thank you all so much for your support. Another reminder that provided that it is safe enough to travel there, I'm hoping to appear at CrimeCon UK, which is being held at the Leonardo Royal Hotel and Spa in London on June the 11th and 12th. If you would like to get a 10% discount on tickets to this event, please visit crimecon.co.uk and use the promo code COOL22. Once again, that's crimecon.co.uk and the promo code is COOL22. In addition, I wanted to provide another reminder that I hold live streaming sessions on a platform called Get Vocal. Every Thursday night from 7 until 8 p.m. Eastern Time, I host what is essentially an after-show for each week's podcast episode, where I have an interactive discussion about the featured case from said episode and answer questions and address comments from listeners. I always include a link to these sessions in our show notes, so be sure to check there for more information or visit getvocal.com. That's getvocal.com. I just wanted to give another shout-out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit, which, like I mentioned earlier, have some very interesting threads and discussions about the Leonard Derrickson case. I need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. So have yourselves a great week, and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. ¶¶